Okay, so have you ever like been in that situation where a project just totally goes sideways
Oh, yeah.
and like everyone's pointing fingers and blaming each
Yeah.
other?
Oh, absolutely.
It's like everyone's playing hot potato, but like no one wants to be left holding
The problem.
the problem.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly things can kind of unravel when trust breaks down.
Yeah.
It's like the foundation just crumbles underneath everything.
Exactly. And that's what I think makes this book Choose Trust so fascinating, is it really digs deep into why trust is so important, especially at work. And it's not just about like warm and fuzzy feelings. You know, it's really about giving you a framework for building trust
Right.
strategically.
It's almost like a blueprint for stronger relationships and better outcomes, you know? And what struck me right away was just the authors' backgrounds. You know, we've got Stuart Meister, who's a seasoned business leader and an executive coach, and then Kevin Vaughn Smith, who's known for really building these massive client relationships.
So
Yeah.
they've clearly walked the walk. You know, they're not just
Right. They've been in the trenches.
talking theory.
Yeah. And they've seen how choosing trust can either make or break a project,
Yeah.
a team, or even a whole company.
Absolutely. And one of the things they highlight right away is this idea that we often get stuck in what they call a transactional mindset, especially at work. You know, we're so focused on closing the deal, hitting those targets,
Yeah.
that we forget about nurturing those long-term relationships.
It's like we're constantly in deal mode, always looking for that next win, and we kind of miss that bigger picture of building trust and collaboration.
Exactly. And the book does such a good job of showing how this short-sighted approach can actually hurt us in the long run. You know, they give all these examples of supply chain breakdowns where distrust leads to delays and finger pointing and even these missed opportunities for innovation because companies are too busy squeezing every penny out of existing contracts.
It's like that saying, penny wise and pound foolish.
We get so caught up in those short-term gains that we sacrifice that potential for long-term success.
Precisely. And that's where the idea of a trust mindset comes in. It's about consciously choosing to prioritize trust, understanding that it's not just a soft skill, it's really a strategic advantage.
So how do we actually make that shift?
Yeah.
How do we go from that transactional mindset to this trust mindset?
Well, the book offers this really helpful framework. They call it the trust triangle. And they argue that trust is built on three key elements: clarity, character, and capability.
Okay, let's unpack that triangle.
Sure.
What do they mean by clarity?
Well, think back to that example we were talking about earlier where everyone's blaming each other when a project goes wrong. Oftentimes, it's that lack of clarity that's at the root of the problem. You know, people aren't on the same page, they have different expectations, communication breaks
This is
down.
like that classic example of the Mars Climate Orbiter.
Oh, yeah.
NASA lost this $327 million spacecraft because one team was using metric units and the other team was using imperial units.
Oh, my gosh.
Talk about a communication breakdown.
A costly one. It really highlights how even brilliant minds can stumble without that clear communication and shared understanding. So clarity is about being crystal clear about goals, roles, responsibilities, and expectations.
So it's not just about being like a good communicator. It's about creating those systems and processes
Yeah.
that ensure that everyone is really on the same page.
Exactly. It's about eliminating that ambiguity and making sure everyone has the information they need to succeed.
Okay, that makes sense. So we've got clarity. What about character? How does character fit into the trust triangle?
So this is where your actions really speak louder than words. It's about demonstrating those qualities that build trust, like integrity, honesty, and reliability.
So it's not just about saying that you're trustworthy, it's about proving it through your behavior.
Exactly. And they highlight five key behaviors that they say really build trust: consideration, courage, honesty, loyalty, and what they call proactive trust.
Proactive trust.
Yeah.
That sounds intriguing. What does that mean?
So it's about taking the initiative to build trust, extending trust as a starting point, rather than waiting for the other party to prove themselves trustworthy first.
So it's about taking a leap of faith, being the first to be vulnerable and open.
Yeah,
But isn't that risky?
it is.
Couldn't people take advantage of that?
Well, there's always a risk, but the authors argue that in most cases, people will rise to the occasion. When you extend trust, you often inspire others to reciprocate, and that's how you build those really strong, resilient relationships.
So it's like setting the tone for the interaction.
Yeah.
You're saying, I trust you, and that encourages the other person to behave in a trustworthy manner.
Exactly. It's about creating that positive feedback loop of trust.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got clarity, we've got character. What about that third leg of the trust triangle capability?
Yeah. So this one's all about having the skills and resources to deliver on your promises.
Okay.
You can have all the good intentions in the world, but if you lack the competence to execute, trust will erode quickly.
It's like saying you're a great chef, but then serving up a burnt dish doesn't really inspire confidence, does it?
Not quite.
Right.
So capability is about ensuring you have the systems, the processes, and the expertise to back up your words with actions.
So it's about aligning your actions with your words, proving that you can walk the walk.
Precisely. And this applies to individuals, to teams, and even to entire organizations.
This trust triangle is such a helpful framework.
It is.
It really breaks down this very complex concept of trust into these three manageable elements.
Uh-huh.
But how does it actually play out in real-world situations?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I love about this book is that it's packed with real-world examples.
Okay.
You know, they share stories of companies like Unipart, Facebook, and Netflix showing how they've successfully applied these principles to build trust and achieve remarkable results.
Okay, let's dive into some of those examples because I'm curious to see how these concepts come to life in different contexts.
Let's start with Unipart.
Okay.
This is a company that was really struggling until John Neal took the helm and he decided to make trust the cornerstone of their culture.
Interesting.
They completely transformed their approach to employee and supplier relationships.
Yeah.
And the results were incredible.
What kind of results are we talking about?
Well, they went from being the struggling company to becoming a global leader in supply chain management.
Wow.
They even helped Jaguar launch next day delivery in France at a time when that was unheard of.
That's impressive.
It was.
It sounds like they really embraced that idea of proactive trust, seeing their suppliers as partners rather than adversaries.
Exactly. And it wasn't just about warm, fuzzy feelings. You know, they implemented systems and processes to support those trust-based relationships, ensuring everyone had the clarity and the capability to succeed.
So they didn't just talk about trust, they embedded it into the fabric of their organization.
Exactly. And that's what made them so successful.
Okay, so Unipart is a great example of how choosing trust can transform a company.
It is.
What about Facebook?
Yeah.
They're not exactly known for being a bastion of trust.
That's true, but even Facebook has recognized the importance of trust in certain situations.
Yeah.
You know, they have this fascinating story about their Tiger Team, which was this cross-functional group that was tasked with tackling the challenge of terrorist content on their platform.
And this was back when there was a lot of scrutiny on social media platforms.
Right.
For not doing enough to address harmful content.
Right, exactly. And Facebook's initial response was somewhat reactive and fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
But then they formed this Tiger Team.
Okay.
And they gave them a very clear mandate, the resources they needed, and most importantly, the trust to make decisions and take action.
So they empowered this team to operate with a high degree of autonomy and trust.
Exactly. And the results were impressive.
Okay.
They were able to develop more effective strategies for identifying and removing terrorist content, and they were able to do it much faster than before.
So it's like that old adage, if you want something done right, give it to a busy person.
Right.
But in this case, it's if you want something done right, give it to a trusted team.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it highlights how trust can be such a powerful tool for tackling complex problems.
Yeah.
Even in an organization as large and complex as Facebook.
Okay, so we've seen how choosing trust can transform a company.
Yes.
Empower a team to address a critical issue.
Mm-hmm.
What about Netflix?
Yeah.
They've obviously been incredibly successful in disrupting the entertainment industry.
They have.
How does trust play into their story?
So Netflix is a great example of how a culture of trust can foster innovation and agility.
Okay.
You know, they're known for empowering their employees to make decisions, to take risks, and challenge the status quo.
So it's not a top-down command and control environment.
Not at all. They encourage open discussion and debate, even at the highest levels.
Wow.
They recognize that the best ideas can come from anywhere in the organization.
Yeah.
And they trust their employees to make those calls.
It's like they've created an environment where people feel safe to experiment, to fail fast,
right,
and to learn from their mistakes.
Exactly. And that kind of environment is incredibly conducive to innovation.
Yeah.
It allows them to move quickly, adapt to changing market conditions, and stay ahead of the curve.
These examples are really inspiring.
They are.
They show how choosing trust can have a real impact.
Mm-hmm.
From turning around a struggling company
yeah.
to empowering a team to tackle a complex problem
uh-huh.
to fostering a culture of innovation.
And it's important to remember that these are just a few examples from the book. There
right.
are many others, each illustrating a different facet of how intentionally choosing trust can lead to better outcomes.
So it's not just a nice to have, it's a must have.
It is.
For any organization that wants to thrive in today's complex and rapidly changing world.
Exactly. And it's not just for companies.
Right.
You know, these principles can be applied to any relationship at work, at home, in our communities.
That's a great point. So whether you're leading a team, working with clients, negotiating a deal, or even just interacting with your family and friends,
yeah.
Choose Trust offers valuable insights and practical advice.
It does.
On how to build stronger, more fulfilling relationships.
It's a reminder that trust is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a choice that can make all the difference.
Yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm. And here's where things get even more interesting. You know, the book argues that in a world that's increasingly dominated by AI, our ability to connect and build trust with other humans is going to become even more valuable.
That's such a thought-provoking point. You know, as AI takes over more of those routine tasks,
yeah.
maybe even some client interactions or negotiations,
yeah.
what's going to set us apart are those uniquely human skills.
Exactly. Empathy, understanding those nuances, building those genuine connections.
Mm.
Those are the things that, at least for now, AI can't replicate.
It really makes you think about, you know, what skills we should all be focusing on to stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
What's going to make us indispensable
right.
in the future.
And I think this book gives us some really good guidance there. You know,
yeah.
mastering these principles of clarity, character, and capability,
mm-hmm.
that could be the key to navigating this evolving landscape.
Okay, so let's zoom back in on this idea of clarity.
Okay.
Because the book really emphasizes this as like the foundation of trust.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier that communication breakdown with the Mars Climate Orbiter.
Right.
What are some of the other common ways that you see clarity get muddled in a business setting?
Well, I mean, we've all been there, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jargon assumptions, yeah. rushed explanations. It's like a recipe for confusion.
Right.
Misaligned efforts and ultimately a breakdown of trust.
It's like we're speaking the same language, but we're using completely different dictionaries.
Exactly. And this lack of clarity can really seep into everything, you know?
Yeah.
How you communicate with clients, how you define roles within a team,
mm-hmm.
even how you measure success.
So how do we combat this? How do we create that crystal clear understanding that the book talks about?
So they offer this really practical exercise.
Uh-huh.
They call it different perceptions of reality.
Okay.
And you basically sit down with a colleague.
Uh-huh.
You pick a word that you use all the time,
okay.
like strategy or innovation,
mm-hmm.
and you each write down what that word means to you.
I bet you get some surprising results from that.
You'd be amazed at the subtle differences in interpretation that can exist,
yeah.
even when people think they're on the same page.
Right.
And those differences can lead to major problems down the line
yeah.
if they're not addressed.
It's like you're both reading from the same map, but you have different ideas of where North is.
Yeah.
So this exercise is like calibrating your compasses.
Yes.
Before you set off on that journey together.
It is. It helps you get aligned from the start.
Right.
And it really sets the stage for more effective communication and collaboration.
That's a great takeaway and something that listeners can try out right away
yeah.
with your teams.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned earlier that the book also digs into the why behind what you're doing.
Yes.
How does that contribute to clarity?
So they introduce this really interesting visual. They call it the mutual ambition model.
Oh.
And it's about really mapping out what each party brings to the table and where those overlaps of shared value lie.
Okay.
You know, it's not just about we're going to increase sales by 10%.
Right.
It's about understanding the deeper purpose behind that goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why does that increase matter? Who benefits?
So you're creating that shared understanding of the why before you even get to the how.
Exactly.
It's like setting out on a road trip
yeah.
if you don't know where you're going.
Right.
Or why you're going there.
You're
going
to end up lost.
You're going to get lost and you're going to start arguing about who's holding the map upside down.
Exactly. But when everyone has that clear picture of the destination and the reasons for the journey, it's much easier to stay aligned and work together effectively.
So clarity is about establishing that shared understanding, both of the destination and the why behind it.
Yes.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Now, what about character? we touched on this earlier, with those five trust behaviors.
Right.
But how do those actually play out
yeah.
in a work setting?
So remember, it's about walking the talk, not just paying lip service to trust, but demonstrating it through your actions.
Okay.
So let's take consideration, for example.
Okay, consideration. It sounds like a basic human decency kind of thing.
It is.
But how does it specifically relate to building trust?
Yeah.
In a professional context.
So it's about actively seeking to understand the other person's perspective,
yeah.
their goals, their needs, their challenges, and not just listening politely,
right.
but really digging deeper, challenging assumptions and asking yourself, are they thinking big enough? Are they overlooking potential risks or opportunities?
So it's about being a true partner, not just a yes man.
Exactly. And this often requires courage.
Okay.
Because sometimes being considerate means having those tough conversations, pushing back on ideas, or advocating for a different approach.
It's about having the courage to challenge the status quo, even if it means ruffling some feathers.
Precisely. And that takes us to honesty.
Okay.
This one seems straightforward, you know, be truthful, be transparent.
Be honest.
But the authors point out that honesty is often more challenging than it seems.
Especially in a business environment. Where there's often that pressure to put a positive spin on things or to kind of downplay problems.
Exactly. They give this great example of a sales team that's bidding for a contract.
Okay.
You know what happens when they realize that the client has requested something that's not actually needed?
Right.
Or could be done more efficiently? Yeah.
Do they stay silent to secure the deal?
Mm-hmm.
Or do they have the courage to be honest, even if it risks losing the business?
That's a real test of character, isn't it? Because in the short term,
it
might seem like the best option to just go along with it.
Right. But in the long run, that lack of honesty can erode trust and damage the relationship.
Yeah.
It's in those moments where you choose the harder right over the easier wrong that you truly build trust.
Okay. So consideration is about seeking to understand other people's perspective. Courage is about speaking up even when it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
What about loyalty?
Okay.
I feel like that word sometimes gets a bad rap, like it's about blind allegiance.
Right. The authors define loyalty in a much more nuanced way.
Okay.
They talk about loyalty on two levels.
Okay.
Loyalty to the relationship itself,
mm-hmm.
that shared ambition and mutual value that we talked about earlier.
Right.
And loyalty to the people involved in that relationship. So it's not about always agreeing or never criticizing. It's about being committed to that shared goal.
Yes.
And supporting each other, even when things get tough.
Exactly. It's about giving credit where credit is due, speaking well of others, even when they're not present, and being willing to stand up for your colleagues and partners.
So loyalty is about having each other's backs, but not in a blind or unquestioning way.
Right.
It's about being committed to that shared success of the relationship and the people involved.
Exactly. And finally, we have proactive trust.
Right.
We touched on this earlier, but it's worth reiterating
yep.
because it's such a powerful concept.
It's about taking that leap of faith,
yeah.
being the first to be vulnerable and open,
mm-hmm.
even though there's always that risk of being taken advantage of.
Right.
What are some practical ways that we can demonstrate proactive trust?
Well, it could be as simple as sharing information freely,
okay.
delegating responsibility, or involving others in decision-making processes.
Mm-hmm.
It's about showing that you trust their judgment. And their ability to contribute.
So it's about creating that space for other people to step up and prove themselves trustworthy.
Exactly. And as we talked about earlier, when you extend trust, you often inspire others to reciprocate.
Right.
And that's how you build those really strong, resilient relationships.
And while there's always a chance that someone might betray that trust.
Yeah.
The authors argue that in most cases, people will rise to the occasion.
They will.
And the potential rewards of building those high trust relationships far outweigh the risks.
I do.
Okay. So we've explored clarity
yeah.
and character, those first two legs of the trust triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about that third leg capability.
Okay.
It's all well and good to have clear goals and good intentions.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the skills and processes to actually deliver on your promises,
right.
that trust is going to erode.
It will. Capability is about having the competence and resources to walk the talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can talk a good game, but ultimately your actions will speak louder than words.
It's like that burnt cake analogy again.
Exactly.
You can claim to be a great baker.
Right.
But if you consistently serve up burnt cakes,
yeah.
people are going to start to doubt your ability.
Exactly. And capability is essential at every level. individual team and organizational.
Okay.
You know, individuals need the skills and knowledge to perform their roles effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Teams need the right mix of talent and clear processes to work together seamlessly.
Yeah.
And organizations need the systems, the resources, and the infrastructure to support those trust-based relationships.
So it's about aligning your intentions with your abilities.
Yes.
Having the right people in the right roles.
Right.
Having clear processes in place and having the resources to support those processes.
Right.
But how do you actually assess and build capability
yeah.
in a way that fosters trust?
So the book really goes deep into the practical side of this,
okay.
emphasizing the importance of interdependence in trust-based relationships.
Okay.
You know, you're not just providing a service to a client or managing a team. You're working together towards a shared outcome.
So it's about moving away from that transactional mindset of you do this, I do that.
Yeah.
And recognizing that everyone's success is intertwined.
Precisely. And this has implications for how you define roles and responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
how you set up governance structures, and even how you think about rewarding trust-building behavior.
Okay, let's make this concrete.
Sure.
What does that look like in a real-world setting?
So they share a case study of this major technology project that went off the rails.
Okay.
It involved multiple suppliers
uh-huh.
working with a client.
Mm-hmm.
And from the start, there was this lack of clarity around roles and responsibilities.
Okay.
No one had really thought about how these relationships would be managed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no formal governance process in place.
So they kind of skipped right over that capability part of the trust triangle.
Pretty much. And predictably, things went downhill fast.
Okay.
The client staff felt threatened by the project. You know, they saw it as this cost-cutting measure that could jeopardize their jobs.
So they started behaving defensively, withholding information.
Right.
Not fully engaging in meetings.
Yeah.
Classic signs of distrust.
Exactly. And because there was no clear governance process, no forum for open communication and problem solving, those issues just festered.
So the suppliers felt like they were being scapegoated
right.
for the project's problems
yeah.
and trust completely broke down,
yeah.
ultimately leading to the project's failure.
It's a cautionary tale about what happens when you don't invest in building capability alongside clarity and character.
So what are the key takeaways from this example? How do we avoid that kind of disaster?
So first, you need to be really meticulous about defining roles and responsibilities.
Okay.
You know, who's doing what?
Huh.
Who's accountable for what outcomes?
Mm-hmm.
The book recommends creating a visual map, almost like an org chart. To illustrate these interdependencies.
So there's no room for ambiguity. Everyone knows where they fit in and what's expected of them.
Right. Second, you need a robust governance process.
Okay.
This doesn't have to be super formal or bureaucratic.
Right.
But it needs to provide a framework for regular communication,
mm-hmm.
problem solving, and course correction.
So a forum where people can raise issues,
yeah.
share concerns, and work together to find solutions before things escalate.
Exactly. And here's where measuring and rewarding trust-building behaviors comes in.
Okay.
You know, if you only focus on outcomes,
mm-hmm.
you miss this huge opportunity to reinforce the actions mm-hmm. that contribute to success in the long run.
So it's about recognizing and celebrating those instances where someone demonstrates honesty
yeah.
or proactive trust. Even if it doesn't immediately lead to a tangible result.
Exactly. It's about creating a culture where those behaviors are valued and recognized, mm. not just seen as nice to haves.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've been talking about how this applies to kind of general business relationships.
Yeah.
What about leadership?
Okay.
How does choosing trust play out
yeah.
in that context?
So the book dedicates an entire chapter to high trust leadership.
Okay.
Emphasizing that it's about being a guide, not a god.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
So it's not about dictating from on high. It's about empowering your team
right.
to navigate the journey together.
Exactly. They quote management guru John Smythe,
oh.
who asks, are you a god or a guide?
Mm-hmm.
A god issues commands and expects blind obedience.
Right.
A guide, however, sets the direction, provides support, and trusts their team to find the best path forward.
It's about creating that shared clarity that we talked about earlier.
Yes.
But then stepping back and yeah. letting your team own the how.
Exactly. And this requires a willingness to be vulnerable, to admit you don't have all the answers, mm. to ask for help.
Which can be tough for leaders.
It can.
Because we're often conditioned to project confidence yeah. and authority.
But the authors argue that this kind of vulnerability actually builds trust. It shows your team that you're human, that you're willing to learn and grow alongside them.
And that creates a much more collaborative and supportive environment.
Exactly. They share this example of Lee Kun-hee,
okay,
the leader who transformed Samsung into this global powerhouse.
Oh, yes, the change everything but your wife and children guy.
That's the one.
Right.
He recognized that Samsung was struggling with quality issues.
Mm.
And he made this bold decision to completely overhaul the company's culture.
And he didn't just issue a memo. He took dramatic action.
He did.
Like that infamous bonfire of faulty phones.
Exactly. It was this powerful symbol of his commitment to quality,
yeah,
and this clear message to his team that things were going to be different.
And it worked.
Samsung became synonymous with innovation and excellence.
It's a powerful testament to the impact of a leader who is willing to be vulnerable,
mm-hmm,
set a bold direction,
yeah,
and then trust their team to find the way.
And it highlights how trust can be this catalyst for change, even in a large established organization.
Okay, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about teamwork.
Sure.
The book makes a really interesting distinction,
yeah,
between groups and teams.
They do. They argue that many groups of people who work together, mm, aren't truly functioning as teams.
Okay.
They're just individuals with their own agendas, often competing for resources and recognition.
It's like that old saying, a team is a group of people who all want to go in the same direction.
Yeah.
A committee is a, yeah, group of people who all want to go in different directions.
Exactly. And the book gives this great illustration of this concept.
Okay.
Imagine a group of people blindfolded, spun around a few times,
mm-hmm,
and then asked to point north.
They'd be disoriented and pointing in all different directions.
Exactly. And that's what happens in a lot of organizations.
Right.
You know, people are working hard,
mm-hmm,
but without that shared understanding of the goal, without that clear North Star,
right,
they end up pulling in different directions.
So how do you transform a group into a true high-trust team?
So it all starts with, you guessed it, clarity.
Clarity.
You need that shared ambition, mm, that crystal clear understanding of the why behind what you're doing.
Right.
And then you need to define what success looks like in very concrete terms.
So everyone knows where they're going.
Yes.
And how they'll know when they get there.
Exactly. And they give the example of Netflix.
Okay.
You know, a company that's renowned for its innovative and collaborative culture.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix encourages open discussion and debate, even at the highest levels.
Wow.
They involve people from different departments in strategic decisions.
Okay.
Recognizing that diversity of thought leads to better outcomes.
And it's paid off for them in a big way.
It has. They've completely disrupted the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
And it's a testament to the power of a team that is aligned around a shared goal that trusts each other to challenge assumptions and contribute their best ideas.
Okay, so we've talked about clarity, character, and capability in general business relationships,
yeah,
in leadership,
mm-hmm,
and in teamwork. What about business development?
Okay.
How does choosing trust play out in that context?
So it's all about shifting away from that traditional transactional approach to sales. You know, the hard sell, the focus on closing the deal at any cost,
mm-hmm,
and instead building genuine relationships based on trust.
So it's about seeing your clients as partners, not just targets.
Exactly. And it starts with truly understanding their needs, their challenges, their ambitions.
Okay.
The book actually outlines a series of questions, mm-hmm, to ask throughout the buyer's decision-making process.
Okay.
It's not about pushing your product or service. It's about being a trusted advisor,
right,
helping them find the best solution, even if it's not yours.
So it's about being genuinely helpful, even if it doesn't immediately lead to a sale.
Exactly. And this requires a willingness to be vulnerable, to admit when you don't have all the answers, mm-hmm, to be transparent about potential risks or limitations.
Because in the long run, building that trust will lead to more loyal clients.
Yes.
And more sustainable success.
Exactly. They share this example of Patagonia.
Okay.
A company that's built this incredible reputation for its commitment to sustainability and ethical practices.
Oh, yeah. The Don't Buy This Jacket campaign.
That's the one.
Right.
It might seem counterintuitive to tell people not to buy your product,
yeah,
but it actually reinforced their brand values and built trust with their customers.
It's about aligning your actions with your words, walking the talk.
Exactly.
And Patagonia takes this even further with their suppliers.
They do.
They're incredibly selective about who they partner with.
Yes.
Ensuring that those companies share their values and commitment to ethical practices.
Exactly. It's about creating a supply chain that's built on trust. not just on the lowest price.
So it's about choosing to work with people who share your values, even if it means sacrificing some short-term profits.
Exactly. And this is a powerful example of how choosing trust can actually be a competitive advantage. Mm. It allows you to charge a premium to attract top talent to build a brand that people believe in.
It's about playing the long game, recognizing that building trust takes time and effort.
It does.
But it ultimately pays off in a big way.
It does. And it's something that anyone can do, regardless of their role or industry.
Right.
It starts with that simple choice to choose trust as a guiding principle in all your interactions.
Okay, so we've covered how choosing trust can transform companies, empower teams, and even revolutionize business development.
Right.
But how did this all play out on a more personal level?
Yeah.
The book also dedicates a chapter to trust in conversations, right?
Yes. They get into the nitty-gritty of how trust is built and eroded in our day-to-day interactions. Mm-hmm. Because so much of building trust happens in those seemingly small moments.
Right.
A casual chat with a colleague, a quick phone call with a client.
It's easy to overlook those moments.
It is.
To think that they don't really matter.
But the authors argue that even those brief exchanges can either reinforce or erode trust. So how we communicate, even in those casual interactions, can have a significant impact on our relationships.
So how do we ensure that our conversations are trust-building rather than trust-busting?
So they offer this really practical framework, a four-step process for having conversations that create value and build trust.
Okay, I'm all ears. Walk us through it.
Okay, so the first step is to intend to help.
Okay.
This means going into the conversation with a genuine desire to support the other person, to understand their perspective, and to find a solution that works for both of you.
So it's about shifting your mindset away from winning or being right.
Yeah.
And instead focusing on collaboration and mutual benefit.
Exactly. And this requires a willingness to listen deeply, not just waiting for your turn to speak,
right,
but truly absorbing what the other person is saying, both verbally and non-verbally.
It's about active listening, right?
It is.
Paying attention to tone of voice, body language, all those subtle cues that reveal what someone is truly thinking and feeling.
Exactly. And this brings us to the second step, listen to understand.
Okay.
They highlight three common ways that we listen, and only one of them truly builds trust.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Break it down for us.
So the first way we listen is to respond or answer.
Okay.
You know, we're focused on understanding the question so we can give a good answer.
Right.
This is fine for factual exchanges, but it doesn't really foster deep connection or trust.
Right. It's more about information exchange than genuine understanding.
Exactly. Then there's listening to get your opportunity to speak.
Okay.
You know, you're just waiting for a pause so you can jump in with your own thoughts and ideas.
This one is all too familiar.
Right.
You're not really present in the conversation. You're just rehearsing your next line.
Exactly. And this one can be a real trust killer
because
it signals that you're not genuinely interested in what the other person has to say.
Right.
You're just waiting for your turn to shine.
So what's the third way, the trust-building way to listen?
It's listening to understand.
Okay.
This means being genuinely curious about the other person's perspective, asking open-ended questions, and reflecting back what you're hearing to ensure you've got it right.
So it's about putting your ego aside, quieting that inner voice.
Yes.
That's always formulating a response.
Right.
And just being present in the moment, truly absorbing what the other person is trying to communicate.
Exactly. And when you do that, something magical happens.
What's that?
People feel heard.
Yeah.
They feel understood. And that creates this powerful sense of connection and trust.
Okay. So we've got intending to help, complete listening to understand.
Yep.
What's the third step in this framework for trust-building conversations?
So it's about moving off the solution.
Okay.
This might seem counterintuitive,
yeah,
especially in a business context where we're often focused on finding solutions quickly.
Right, but they're arguing that jumping to solutions too quickly can actually hinder trust.
Exactly. They use this analogy of an onion. You know what we often hear initially is just the outer layer, the surface level problem or request.
Right.
But to truly understand the issue, we need to peel back those layers.
Okay.
Ask probing questions that get to the heart of the matter.
So, for example, if a colleague comes to you and says, we need to invest in a new CRM system.
Yeah.
How would you apply this principle of moving off the solution?
So instead of immediately jumping into a discussion about different CRM options,
right.
you might ask questions like, what led you to that conclusion?
Mm.
What specific challenges are you facing with our current system?
Okay.
What outcomes are you hoping to achieve with a new one?
So you're digging deeper, trying to understand the underlying why behind their request.
Exactly. And by doing that, you're demonstrating that you're not just interested in selling them something.
Right.
You're genuinely interested in helping them find the best solution for their needs.
And that builds trust because it shows that you're not just trying to push your agenda.
Yeah.
You're truly invested in their success.
Exactly. And it often leads to a much more productive and collaborative conversation because mm-hmm. you're both working from this place of shared understanding.
Okay. So we've got intending to help.
Yep.
Listening to understand and moving off the solution.
Right.
What's the fourth and final step?
So it's about creating shared understanding.
Yeah.
Once you've peeled back those layers mm-hmm. and gotten to the heart of the issue,
yeah.
you need to ensure that you're both on the same page about the problem,
yeah.
the desired outcomes, and the path forward.
So no room for assumptions or misinterpretations?
Exactly. This involves using clear, concise language,
mm-hmm.
avoiding jargon, and regularly summarizing what you're hearing to confirm understanding.
And it also involves being willing to acknowledge and address any differences in perspective, right?
Absolutely. It's about having those tough conversations in a respectful and constructive way.
Right.
Recognizing that even when you disagree, you can still find common ground and move forward together.
And that's the essence of trust, isn't it? Being able to navigate those disagreements,
yeah.
those differences in perspective
mm-hmm.
in a way that strengthens the relationship rather than weakens it.
It is. And it's this powerful reminder that trust isn't just some abstract concept. It's mm-hmm. something we build and reinforce
yeah.
through our everyday interactions,
mm-hmm.
through the way we communicate, the way we listen, and the choices we make in those seemingly small moments.
Mm. So choosing trust is about being intentional in our communication.
Yes.
About actively listening to understand,
mm-hmm.
about digging deeper to uncover the root cause of issues,
mm-hmm.
and about creating that shared understanding
yeah.
that allows us to move forward together even when we don't agree on everything.
Beautifully put.
Yeah.
It's about recognizing that trust is a process, not a destination,
mm-hmm.
and that it requires ongoing effort and attention.
This has been such an insightful conversation.
It has.
Choose Trust really offers such a comprehensive framework.
It does.
For understanding and building trust both in our personal and professional lives.
Mm.
What's the one big takeaway that you hope our listeners walk away with?
I hope they recognize that trust is a choice, not a chance occurrence.
Okay.
And it's a choice that can make a profound difference in their lives and careers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they can embrace these principles and make that conscious effort to build trust in all their interactions, they'll unlock incredible potential for mm-hmm. themselves, their teams, and their organizations.
Beautifully said. And that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Choose Trust.
Yes.
We've covered a lot of ground today from
yeah.
the importance of clarity and character
mm-hmm.
to the power of proactive trust
yeah.
and the nuances of trust building conversations. But before we wrap up, we want to hear from you.
Yes.
What resonated with you most from Choose Trust?
Yeah. What really stuck with you?
Was there a particular example or anecdote that you were just like, oh, wow.
And if you had to pick just one of those five trust behaviors to focus on in your own work life,
yeah,
which one would it be and why?
Yeah. Tell us in the comments below.
Yeah, we love getting into those discussions.
Don't forget to subscribe to The Deep Dive for more explorations of fascinating books and ideas.
And if you enjoyed this deep dive,
yes,
please share it with your friends,
yeah.
your colleagues.
Spread the trust.
Maybe even that one coworker who's always a little skeptical.
Yeah.
We'll be back soon with another deep dive. But in the meantime, remember, trust is a choice.
It is.
And it's a choice that can change everything.